About 3 weeks ago, one of our most long-term Sunstone subscribers found a manila folder on his doorstep with this note attached. Last week, I witnessed the most extraordinary interview. Whether out of my body or out of my mind, I could not tell. He didn't appear like George Burns, but he did offer to reduce himself to human language, logic, and looks. The transcribed interview is attached. Use it as you will. In keeping with my devotion to following the examples of the scriptures, you can call me Shedder Lomach. The said Sunstone subscriber forwarded the document with the following: although I have a personal philosophy of never doubting anyone's personal spiritual experiences, in all honesty, I must say that I think this interview is a hoax, full of heresy. I think I recognize the writing style of an old missionary companion, but I haven't pursued the issue. Good luck. To recreate that interview today, we have asked some friends to read parts of the interview for us. Welcome to the panel, What should we call you?
Mr. Ineffable, A number one is fine, just chairman of the board. We are in a corporate age, so I want to present myself in a form that you can understand.
And this is?
This is the little missus.
Welcome. Well, this is a little overwhelming. Where can we start?
I've only got 45 minutes.
Well, I can ask anything, right?
No comment.
No comment? Even you use no comment?
No comment. Just joking. It'd be hell if I did.
You use hell?
Only as a place, never as a cuss word.
Oh, you mean literally it would be hell if you gave no comments. I get it.
Quick today, aren't we, Sparky? Let me slow down my thinking skills to human level. Okay, I'm slowed way down. Well, that's too slow. Almost sounded like a high council speaker. Okay, what I meant was, well, yes, hell has no comments from me, but my commenting, well, it creates its own special kind of hell now, doesn't it? I mean, in theory, if you're bothering to be a Mormon at all, it's either because you think this is just the coolest social club in the world, and hopefully I've made it too difficult, boring, and unenjoyable for that, or because, unlike most other churches, you actually desire continuous comments from me. True?
Well, yes. We want comments. It's just that, to be honest, it seems like you comment far more about long hair and short skirts and wearing ties in the chapel and women quitting their jobs and about, well, poverty and hunger and world peace and the ozone. The priorities always sound like they're coming from white old businessmen from Orem, suburban America.
Really, you think so? Let me take some notes. I can change that.
Are you being facetious?
I'm here to learn. Why tell you to pray if I can't listen? You do think I can, don't you?
Of course you can. You're omnipotent, but well, don't you already know this?
Oh, I get it. I already know this. It's just those Salt Lake boys getting it wrong again. If they were only more in tune.
Well, don't you ever get frustrated with some of their sermons?
Well, bored maybe, but let's be honest. Continuous revelation is a huge problem. It's the only reason for Mormonism's existence, and it's a complete no-win situation for me. I mean, if I don't talk often enough, how did Melville put it? Silence is at once the most harmless and the most awful thing in all nature. Silence is the only voice of our God. But if I talk all the time, then I'm interfering, I'm stifling your free agency and your personal growth. If what I say doesn't make sense, then my prophets don't have a clue about what's going on, they're out of touch. But if it makes too much sense, well, any old fool could have figured it out. Who needs a prophet for that? No win. No, I can't win.
Well, it's just that some revelations seem eternally true and moving, and some, well, seem a little less inspired.
And some of the parts you felt were boring at 12 are incredibly moving at 80. And some that strikes you today did nothing for the Israelites 2,800 years ago. Let's face it, church is boring or irrelevant about 90% of the time. So what? So is work, so is raising kids, so is school, and baseball, and Shakespeare, and Beethoven. But is there 10% that absolutely knocks you for a loop? That's what you have to ask yourself. This sound bit sitcom, a laugh every 45 seconds or lose market share approach to life, is extremely modern and a little frightening. That's not to deny that catatonic sermons are not necessarily synonymous with spirituality.
But if occasionally we heard the outrage of Job or the anger of Amos calling the rich cows of Bashan, then we get a better sense that you are really there.
You don't get a sense that I'm there because you don't really want me to be there. What's that latest bumper sticker? God isn't dead, he just has Alzheimer's.
Oh, man.
Grandpa God is just getting a little forgetful, kids, but he still loves you. He really does. The fact is, people want me to have Alzheimer's. Even the image of Father nowadays is an image with too much power and influence and brutality and even sexual energy. But Grandpa's impotent. He's already had his prostate, and there's nothing to fear from cuddling up on his lap. Glaucomic, cataractic, so I won't see clearly, won't notice, certainly won't judge all your little sins. You want it both ways, a loving, involved, caring God and one who can't do anything. I get no respect, I tell you.
You're sort of like Rodney Dangerfield.
Don't get me started, okay?
Well, okay, all right, let's move on.
Shoot, at 1,000 years a day, I'm more expensive than F. Lee Bailey.
This is just a personal thought. Couldn't you have made lima beans as fattening as donuts and donuts as healthy as lima beans?
If you ask me the boxer versus briefs questions, I'm out of here.
Do you mind if I ask, personally, emotionally, what kind of people anger you the most, besides mass murderers?
Emotionally, that's pretty easy. The ungrateful.
You want people to bow down and thank you?
A little. I mean, if you knew how hard I worked to get certain things right.
Like
the sunset. That took a lot of work. Or airplanes. Do you know there are people who will actually pull down the shades during takeoff, miss that first few seconds of weightless thrill watching the cars and people turn into toys, and then into ants, and then into nothing? It's one of the truly great dreams and miracles of all time, and people pull down the shades and sleep through it. It kills me. And there are people that will not even drive 200 miles completely out of their way for no other reason but to spend an hour in Monument Valley or the Grand Canyon. That really ticks me off. And there are the more uncommon ingratitudes.
Like?
You know, the fat Republicans who actually pretend to love this country and even while they claim sincerely they're self-made men, they forget, of course, who made the country and who gave them their education and a stable home and the medical science which kept their brains from wasting away from childhood diseases, who made the peace to keep the laws and the peace to allow them to get far richer than they deserve. People who bear their testimonies and then the same breath will say, how come she brought a Mexican with her? It works both ways. I look at the poor filled with hate and resentment against America, never stopping to bow their heads and realize that despite all the unfairness which generally exists, they are still living better off than 95% of all the humans who are or ever have lived. All that sacrifice and just anger, no gratitude or sense of something owed back. It kills me, and it's not good for them. An ungrateful person can never truly be happy.
Then what about faith versus reason? Is faith just an excuse for laziness and stupidity? Why don't you appreciate people who struggle? I mean Jacob, whose name was he who clings to the heel or heel holder, wrestled with an angel and got his name changed to Israel. Struggle with God, God fighter. That's the name of your chosen nation, struggle with God. Isn't the struggle the point?
Sometimes.
Sometimes?
Look, there should be no confusion about my highest values. It's not faith, it's not hope, it's charity, love, goodness. Paul says it, John says it, Moroni says it, King Benjamin says it, my son says it. I may be omniscient, but there's one thing I don't know, how I possibly could have said it any clearer or any plainer. And of course, not love of mankind alone without love of God. That only leads to hideous politics and made-up morals. And not love of God alone without love of people. That leads to inhuman piety. Ethical monotheism, love of God and humanity, not doctrine, not work, not money, not art for its own sake, not struggle for its own sake, not obedience for its own sake, not church callings or scholarship or despair, self-awareness or individuation, whatever those snotty words are supposed to mean, goodness, love, doing good. All the other things are tools to that end. Do I want people to struggle and find themselves and develop talents and be obedient and doubt and mature and grow? And finally to come to Christ? Of course. Why? So they can rely on the mercy and grace of Jesus and repent. Why? So they can change and get the Spirit. Why? So they can do the acts that the Savior or I would do if he or I were here. It's that simple.
That's the meaning of life?
Of course. Beat Lou.
Beat Lou?
Bless the lives of others. B-T-L-O-O. Beat Lou.
So like totally forget ourselves in the service of others? Submit? Sublimate? Sacrifice? No self-fulfillment?
I didn't say to ignore yourself. You are one of the others. So bless your own life as well. Treat yourself exactly as well as you would treat all the others. No better, no worse. Beat Lou. But bless implies me, religion, not just doing what other people want. Doing what will bless them. That's the entire purpose of the church. To bless you so you can bless others. Frankly, a lot that goes on inside the church and out here in the alternatives is not focused on blessing.
Oh, so we were talking faithful history. So distort the truth, so it sounds good.
I never said to lie or even hide the truth, but I can see people's innermost hearts, and it's very obvious when something is said in a way which will bless or in a way which will destroy. Beat Lou. That's the only thing that really matters, and there, you don't even have to climb the Himalayas to get it.
Hey, we're cooking. Got the meaning of life out of the way. Cool. Now, what about politics? I mean, I'm sure you didn't want to sleep around with JFK, but could you really have voted for Nixon?
Politics is another no-winner. Should we enforce the Bible legally?
Of course not.
So you're a libertarian. No legal limits on pornography or prostitution or drug use. No prayer in school. Total separation.
I'm not a libertarian, but basically, yes. I don't want the Bible making up laws or values. Except for redistributing wealth.
Except for redistributing the wealth and helping the poor and healing the sick and busing and public education. Only then do you quote the Bible.
It's very complicated. I could defend my values without the Bible.
Yes, but could you sell them without it? See, some actions need public actions more than personal righteousness. Ending slavery, coming to Christ, missionaries did not do that. Pollution. In Pasadena and Los Angeles combined, there were 101 first-stage smog alerts in 1978, only 10 in 1991. Not because of a family home evenings or speed of conversions, but because of another kind of conversion, catalytic. Forced on us by the evil Democrats, mostly. But on the other hand, 70% of all incarcerated juveniles come from fatherless homes. So one thing that gang members, O.J. Simpson, and even computer hackers all have in common. In divorces of even religious middle-income homes, huge percentages of the children suffer for decades, angry, depressed, underachieving, low educational goals, unfaithful, unable to commit or trust in their own lives. See, all the social safety net programs in the world aren't worth jack if the families fall apart. And all the strong families in the world aren't worth jack if they don't do something with their values for the common good. Who's that popular governor in New Jersey right now? She's liberal socially but conservative fiscally. That's the new in thing. I'm just the opposite. I'm conservative. Oh, let's see. More support for traditional morality and more spending for the poor. Although hopefully I'd be a little bit less corrupt and wasteful than the current crop. Or maybe I am, teach correct principles, but don't enforce morality or charity, libertarian.
But it is up to us ultimately, right? We are free to follow and vote our own consciences.
That question takes us all the way back to Adam and Eve. That wasn't me making you free. That was their choice to ignore my commandments and let humans do it on their own, without me.
But you wanted Eve and Adam to break that commandment.
I did.
Didn't you?
Yeah.
Yes?
No.
What?
Frankly, my son and I split on the issue. That's why they got two commandments.
What?
He always wants to heal everyone and comfort them and keep them safe from harm, nice and cozy in their safe little gardens. He said if I kicked them out of the garden, there would be war and hunger and abuse and torture and desperation. I would be a neglectful, abusive parent. But I said, counting the pre-existence, they're teenagers already, cut the apron strings. Face it, in everyone's eternal existence, there will have to come a time where they try to completely do it on their own, with no interference from me. Leave the nest, go on the heroic journey, the mission, the walkabout. He said that Adam and Eve will only know I love them if they feel my constant companionship. I said they'll only know I love and care for them if I leave them the hell alone, if I trust them that much. He said if I leave nature free, there will come about earthquakes and typhoons, SIDS, AIDS, and cancer. What meaning of life will a starving Somalian baby get out of her two-day life? I said what meaning will everyone else get from life if no one is allowed to die until age 70? We can't stop crack babies unless we physically stop people from taking crack. People thank me constantly for all the angels and the coincidences and the little miracles. They should thank me for all the random chance accidents. Every time a truly righteous person gets mangled or murdered, people should drop to their knees and shout hallelujah. Praise the Lord for making life truly arbitrary, for having enough confidence in human beings to trust them absolutely to face this entire horrible, wonderful experience all on their random chance, non-interfering own. Does anyone really want to wake up and find all the hard rocks were only plastic papier-mâché ones from Disneyland? So we both told them the truth. We told them two different truths. They would have to have the final voice themselves. That way they get the blame and the glory.
You? How can you? Your son, you can't disagree. You have the same mind and will. You're both, well, you.
Look, opposite things can both be true. Haven't you read 2 Nephi 2:15? It must needs be there was an opposition, even the forbidden fruit in opposition to the tree of life, the one being sweet and the other bitter. Now, what's your antecedent there, huh, grammatically speaking?
You mean which is the one and which is the other?
Yes, exactly. Does the first refer to the first, or is it a chiasm where the last refers to the first? Which is sweet and which is bitter?
You wrote it.
We wrote it. And my son thinks safety and spiritual closeness is sweet. I think it's bitter, ultimately in the long run. I think experiencing real life to the bony, bloody marrow is sweet, no matter how bitter it gets. Adam and Eve said they wanted to try it on their own, so we let them. Keep our hands off. Let evolution and chance take over.
So we are alone then? Prayer doesn't work?
Well, of course it works. Every time you pray, your Savior, he's called your advocate in Greek, Parakletos, defense counsel, your Johnny Cochran, comes and argues your case. He begs for you. He bugs me to let him interfere and save you and do miracles. Now, I'm against it on principle, but every now and then, he gets his way. I'm sorry. But miracles are a no-win situation for me, too. If I rescue my son before Herod kills all the babies, what does that mean? I don't love the other babies equally? But if I do miracles all day long, no one grows. You pray to me to come down and cure AIDS. You should get on your knees and beg me not to cure AIDS. Let it do its worst, and somehow, eventually, humans will gather the collective willpower, money, self-control, and scientific knowledge to cure it once and for all, like polio. If I do the miracles, I've got to keep on doing them. But if people solve the problem, it stays solved for good. In this unique way, humans are more powerful than God.
Wait a second. Let me get this. We should be thankful for disasters and not pray for miracles. What about Mormon chapter 9?
Well, then at least make up your mind on the issue. You want me to butt out and mind my own business when it comes to telling you how old the earth is or how many babies to have or what kind of movies to see, what kind of four-letter words to put in your sundial short stories, what you should or shouldn't publish, why can't Mr. A number one mind his own business? But suddenly when it comes to fighting communism or Jeffrey Dahmer or enforcing international law, suddenly it's turned everything over to faith. Let the old man upstairs do it all for us. Let him clean up all our little sins and heal all our little problems. Do you want to stay in the garden or leave it? Do you want a God who tells you how to live righteously and do justice? Or do you want an upstairs maid who picks up after you? Well, honey child, this God don't do windows. Although every now and then I just might. Depends on my moods. The point of life is to get you to learn how to live righteously on your own. You enforce the laws. You do the social justice thing. You want to let all the barbarians go free and toast 6 million Jews and think it pleases me because your pacifistic heart is oh so pure and your hands are oh so clean? That may be true, but that's not what my good book says. Look, if it's a no-win situation for me, it's the same for you. You want to stop capital punishment because of the 1 in 1,000 who might be innocent, and you don't want innocent blood on your hands? Well, if you stop capital punishment, plenty of innocent kids are going to die too, maybe far more with it than without it. I'm not telling you how to think, but I'm telling you to face the music honestly. Just don't tell me you want me in your life when you really don't.
You said you'd fight our battles for us.
Oh, so now life is black and white. You, who love all the shades of gray, life and freedom are bloody and messy. I shouldn't have to tell you people that. That's the point of the whole thing. I need a drink for this part. You think I want you so spiritually prissified? Look at how I made life, sex and having babies, origin of life and the offal of refuse from the same organs. Now, why did I do that? Priesthood holders panting, spiritual wives with their legs spread in the stirrups, blaspheming to high heaven, pushing and grunting to make a miracle called life, modest as Madonna. Quiet, reverent sacrament meetings? Sure, as long as the baby isn't teething and splashing diarrhea and vomit all over you. Look up the word blessing. It comes from the same root as blood. Life is messy. And it's conservatives, too. It's so fun for them to give their little sermons. Always ask his advice when tempted to date at 14 or if you're tempted to buy that immodest prom dress. But do they really want to know my advice when they're heading off to the deer hunt or buying that new diamond ring or the 40,000 sports utility vehicle or voting to keep the hungry Mexicans in their place? Read the scriptures. Know my minds, folks. Beat Lou. You're all hypocrites.
So then, if we can move on, Adam and Eve and all those Bible stories are all literally true?
The first five books of the Bible are called the Torah, the law, but Torah really means teaching, instruction. You've got to ask yourself, what is trying to be taught? What are you supposed to learn from this? They're not called the history or science books. They're not even called the doctrinal encyclopedia. I could list all my doctrines in 25 pages if that's all I cared about. Back to your question, the Garden of Eden story is just about the truest, most important story in the Bible.
In historical reality, like in 4004 BC or whatever?
You've got 45 minutes with the creator of the universe and you want to talk time management? We are in a corporate age. Look, Steve Covey and Hiram Smith are my time management prophets. Call them.
Well, I'm not trying to put words into your mouth, but from what you just said, I take it you're not a scriptural literalist. You just said that these are stories, right? I don't want to misinterpret.
I just said they are very true stories. I just said they are very important stories, carefully designed to teach you something.
But literally, word for word, true historical stories?
What do you want from me? A long dissertation on E and J and Q and the Spalding manuscript? I have so little power I can't influence whoever wrote them to say what I wanted them to say?
Excuse me, but I actually thought that deep down somewhere, I don't know how to say this, I thought you'd be a liberal.
Look, I love liberals and I love conservatives. No, wait. That's my son that has to love everyone, isn't it? I'm the one who gets to be jealous and hate and spew, aren't I?
Well, I am a child of God.
Yeah, so is Adolf Hitler. Frankly, one side trivializes, sanctimonializes, and doctrinalizes the scriptures to death. The other side analyzes and philologizes them to death. Both end up with dead scriptures, and I want them alive. Both sides miss the point.
Let me move on. Being rude isn't a sin when you do it. You're perfect.
No.
Here's a question handed in by some man in the audience. It reads, this may seem trivial, but it's as important as heck to some of us married guys. If fidelity and monogamy are so important to you, did you have to make 19-year-olds look quite so darn attractive?
That's hilarious, isn't it, honey? I don't mean to laugh. I suppose it's rude to laugh.
Being rude isn't a sin when you do it. You're perfect.
Well, okay. Anyway, we're laughing because we were just discussing that a few millennia ago. If we shouldn't have given not less, but twice as much sex drive to humans.
We have too little? That's hardly the problem.
Yeah, so you say. I'll tell you, we went way, way out of our way to make everyone here dog bone ugly. I mean, your hunks and your supermodels, they have these big, hideous, floppy, ugly, wart-like growths hanging off the edge of their faces, ears. Those are elephant man birth defects in other galaxies. People end up in leper colonies. Not only that, we cut your testosterone hormone levels in half compared to the last few planets. Anyway, I'm still not certain we got it right. I mean, on the last planet, the sex drive had so many drawbacks, but it had good points, too. I don't know which is worse. I mean, we did have to send floods and earthquakes and lightning and general conference morality pass around the chewing gum stories every third day or so, just to keep people somewhat in line. But on the other hand, there wasn't a bachelor man or woman over 22 on the entire planet. Husband and wife squabbles? Non-existent. A man could not bear to sleep alone on the couch, let alone go through divorce or trial separation. People made up within 10 minutes. Marriage were the most romantic things ever seen. No one worked more than 5 minutes from home. Now, not a lot got done, I'll admit. Science and art and medicine and warfare and stayed, you know, pretty primitive for millennia. Because working late in the lab was unheard of. But there was very little crime. No one would go off to war 6 months a year, that's for sure. The best we'd get out of our missionaries was 90 days at a shot. Romance of family was everything and all the time. That's why we decided to tone down sex on Earth. Science has happened incredibly fast here, as has warfare and materialism and anger and music and medicine. We don't have to send revelations quite so often to keep people chaste. People are a little more grown up, but we don't dare reduce the sex drive any further. The internal combustion engine would be invented the first 500 years, and all the natural resources would be used up in another five. Marriages would last about a week. See, the problem with humans is you always ask, why is it like this? You never ask, it's great this way. What if X or Y had happened instead? You think there are good and bad things, and you never seem to realize that every bad thing and weakness has some benefits, and every good thing has some costs. People who demand change often assume the new change will come with no negatives, and there ain't no free lunch. Everything has a cost. Anyway, as for the cute guys and girls in the tight pants, we're sorry. We made them as ugly as we could.
Would you mind terribly if we switched the conversation and asked Sister Mrs. Could we ask your wife a few questions?
Shoot, but you don't need my permission.
How are you? This is very awkward, but, well, many of your daughters especially long to know more about you and emulate you. There are many theories why you don't communicate more. Have you been silenced? Is there an official reason?
No.
Wow. We've heard from you at last. That's great. But why not before now? To protect you so your name won't become a cuss word?
No.
Is it that you are off doing great things and just don't have time for your children? You're sort of the ultimate career woman?
Not at all.
This is sort of tough. What? How come? Are you not supposed to talk?
No.
You just keep answering yes or no. Please, your children long to know about you. Can you give us just elaborate a little bit more why we don't know more about you?
Well, frankly, this is a little embarrassing. I just like to support my husband and let him do the talking. But by nature, this is so embarrassing. I'm just very shy and private. I'm just a bit timid.
Shy? You can't be shy. You're perfect.
I beg your pardon. You're the first ones who want J. Golden Kimball to hang on to his personality through all eternity. Well, if he can hang on to his, I'm certainly allowed to hang on to mine. I just never felt comfortable speaking in public.
Shy? But then, well, I don't want to be presumptuous, but are you saying that there might be other universe systems where the Mrs. isn't shy?
Obviously.
Seriously?
Are you kidding? My cousin, well, you couldn't pronounce her name. It's sort of like Shirley. Shirley is the funniest person you've ever met. Dyed-in-the-wool, faithful, but sassy and outspoken. You cannot believe some of the things she would say. Well, over in her galaxy, she's talking and second-guessing her husband all the time. Total chaos. Their scriptures read like a Picasso painting. Craziness. I love her, don't get me wrong. But I think she's ruining those galaxies, and she thinks the same about me. What can I say? The church is a little bit more lively and controversial over there. My husband went for obedience and order. But her husband was a sculptor during his mortal life, so most of the church leader he calls are artists and scholars. Not very efficient, and honestly, not half the compassion and self-sacrificing as on Earth. You know how most artists can be? General conferences are circuses. But some of the souls over there, you know, the computer programmers and the secretaries and the kindergarten teachers, the shy moms and dads, well, they feel totally out of the church there. Unneeded and unwanted. They just try to be good, decent, down-to-planet people. And they are rarely given church callings. They never quite feel at home in the church, no matter how devoted they are. Some bishops even have church courts if you're too soft-spoken. It's sad. They have this question on their temple recommend form which says, can you believe this? When was the last time you spoke out and challenged and shot down some old ideas? The last time you shook things up and let the world know you were a god or goddess in embryo and not a chair? Frankly, that's a very humiliating question to a person like me, don't you think? Very uncomfortable. I'm glad that here I can be the kind of heavenly mother to comfort the meek and humble, the self-sacrificing and the shy. I begged my husband to let those normal, good people know in a quiet, spiritual way how much they are wanted and needed. And I think they feel quite at home in the church over here. Don't you?
Can't help but love her.
And how should I put this then? You don't, I would guess anyway, or maybe you do. Do you mind people who pray to you?
Oh, please.
It offends you?
You're making me blush. I mean, in private, if it makes them feel closer, But that is strictly between us, never in public. I mean, a church does have to have some rules. Otherwise, it's just a club where everyone can do whatever they feel like. Privacy makes a lot of things okay. That's what's so wonderful about the temple ceremony. You are completely free to interpret the ceremony in absolutely any way you want, just as long as you never speak a word of it to anyone else. You have complete freedom. I'm sorry, I've said too much.
Well, no, please, can I ask just a few more? We've waited so long.
Okay. I prefer not to.
Okay. Oh, well, it's just that, we want to get to know you, to know what it was like to grow up, to meet him. What attracted you to him?
Even you want the wife to give the talk about how we met on a blind date at BYU?
You're right. I'm sorry. Maybe I should ask.
No, please. I'm just teasing. Even timid people can joke. He was sort of an accountant, only not with numbers, very by the book, somewhat strict. People didn't think he was overly emotional, but deep down he had a good heart, very tender to the poor and lonely. Even family thought he was tight-fisted, but he wouldn't give fancy gifts to people who didn't need them. He'd save it for those in true need. That's all. I'm sorry I've said too much.
Wait, please. This is our only... Well, we've got to ask. I mean, what about the priesthood? I mean, this is the burning issue. I mean, don't you have the priesthood?
I've had the authority to do whatever the Holy Ghost told me since I was 8 years old.
But the actual priesthood...
Can I say something here?
Honey, I can handle it. The power to act in my name... We are all goddesses and gods in embryo, so...
But all the offices, passing the sacrament, healing, presiding. Doesn't it bother you how some men get all the high and mighty with that oh-so-spiritual bishop's voice? Now, sisters, all those games...
Unlike you, I happen to be able to see all those bishops, even their underground, buried, deep, secret hearts that they're not even aware of. And honestly, you are only describing about 8.2% of them. I always hear those stories about how terrible they all are. People used to say that about my husband, too, behind his back.
An 8.2% jerk ratio is pretty darn good, let me tell you. But people are humans. The artiste over in Shirley's gallery, they have a 25% jerk ratio. You want Wagner or Liszt to be your bishop?
But please, is it just, is it fair... It's not the 8.2%. It's the entire system. Women are second-class citizens. Is this really what you want for your daughters?
What I really deep down want is for my children to stop hurting each other. Most of all, I want my sons to stop hurting my daughters. And according to your own statistics, my sons do about 90% of all the physical hurting. You see, I read all those articles about why things should change, and the articles are beautifully said and emotionally true. But every single one of them leave this one little tiny paragraph out, which is this. Women in the church already outnumber men, and women out of the church aren't doing 90% of the physical evil in the world. Men are. Do we really want a world where the men have less importance in religion, feel less a need to attend? The key challenge of any civilization is how to civilize, tame, feminize, if you will, the men. And all the articles about making the church better for women leave out this crucial part of the argument. What the world needs most is more men in church. How do we get them there voluntarily? Those who want to change everything better be sure that they can replace it with something that will make those boys feel important, needed and wanted even to fight every ounce of their natural inborn tendency and voluntarily commit themselves to the immense sacrifices for faith, family, and fidelity. I can't pass laws telling my sons not to break my daughter's hearts or to be emotionally involved in his children. Men have little enough self-discipline, even in the church. How can you think my daughters will be better off with even more men out of it?
Can you really countenance this prejudicial patriarchal?
Frankly, it has changed in the past, and it may change in the future. Those are the details for you and him to work out. Whether it changes or not, you need a program for just the men, for the young men. The born-agains are finally understanding this with their Promise Keeper stadium rallies and their New Man magazines. Blacks know this with their million-man marches for restraint and responsibility and commitment.
Wait. You're backing Louis Farrakhan?
Please, I'm only saying his needs assessment is accurate. Primitively out in nature, as in some tribes today, men didn't even know they made babies. Fatherhood was not even a concept. It is only by artificial, cultural, religious means that men become part of their family. Artificially important. But what now is his uniquely important position? Physical protector? That's gone. Sole breadwinner? That's gone. Sage-like dispenser of counsel and wisdom? That was always a joke. Stern disciplinarian? That's almost a crime. He isn't even needed as sperm donor anymore. So what is left? Pretending that Pop is the one to call people in for family prayer? That even that is the mostly pretense. So what is left? Nothing. And surprise, shock of shock, men are fading away more and more, no longer needed as the central pillar. They are fading to the sides, abandoning more families, seeking pleasure, hurting my daughters more and more. The Sermon on the Mount is perhaps the greatest feminist document in ancient history. A call for men to voluntarily abandon their sexual, violent, aggressive natures, and feminize and restrain themselves through service, humility, and submission. The sermon is taught in a million South America churches every Sunday, but how many young men are in the audience to hear it?
This is an old argument. The priesthood is what, sort of affirmative action for the spiritually handicapped?
I know it's not fair. Life never is. The criminal gets to be the center of attention far more than the law obeyer. The pregnant girl always gets more attention than the obedient one. The prodigal son always gets more Super Bowl parties than the good son. That's life.
So what? We baby men by making them the boss is sort of a petty bribe to keep them involved? I cannot believe that God would stoop so low.
The scriptures are an entire history of him stooping so low. Petty threats and petty bribes for the very valuable human. Because over the generations, teenage boys will see that they are less and less needed as missionaries and bishops. And since they don't even enjoy being there in the first place, and since the fear of hellfire has been outlawed as spiritual abuse, they will fade away from church and from chastity, from fidelity, and from family. I'm not saying what should be done. I'm just saying that this is the one issue everyone seems to ignore. And it needs to be faced honestly by those pushing for change.
Well, I must be honest. We never thought you would come out against your own daughters. It's unfathomable.
Oh, dear. You're so right. I'm sorry. I've said far too much. I can't say any more. I only wanted to be truthful and helpful, and all I've done is to make you angry and hurt. It's better when I don't talk at all. When I'm silent, people can conceive me to be anything they need at that moment. Obviously, I never should have said anything in the first place. I can only truly nurture when I remain completely, eternally silent. That's the most loving thing I can do for my children, my greatest gift, silence.
Back to you then. Wow. Can I leave policy for a moment? Let me think. How about your personal life, growing up? Is there anything you want to tell us about? I don't know. What kind of teenager were you? Were you ever tempted?
Well, Hebrews 4:15, of course, makes it clear that even my son was tempted in all things. But, well, I was one of the lucky ones. This is a little personal, but, well, I just fell deeply, madly, forever in love. I guess a lot of people do, but when they said to give her my first priority, well, I took them seriously. We all pay lip service to that, but most don't do it. I decided that in marriage it was not my duty always to be right, but always to be righteous, to answer back with a soft voice no matter who was right. When I was away on business, I would write her love letters nightly. Whenever I was tempted, I could just blink and see her face on my eyelids. With every breath, I could taste her mouth and smell her hair. Every time I rubbed my fingers together, I could feel her skin. Every time I half smiled, I heard her voice in my grin. When I traveled, well, I blinked a lot, but it was easy with her. I'm sorry, I'm getting way too personal.
Did you have any problems as a teenager?
Well, thank goodness for my galaxy's version of the Boy Scouts and baseball. It was played with seven balls and three bat throgs, but it was sort of like baseball. I don't know what I would have become without baseball and scouting. Has anyone noticed that after I restored the priesthood and that didn't quite spread as fast as planned and Joseph Smith was killed, that I had baseball invented the very next year?
You caused baseball?
I'm limited to just religion? Where does it say that?
But baseball, all the bad baseball salaries, the competition, the pride, benching kids so they feel like losers, macho sports stuff.
See, that's the problem. People, humans, are not omniscient. You can only see what is, never what would be otherwise, or would have been otherwise. Like, everyone gets upset with my Salt Lake boys, but I'll tell you something, these are good boys. They really are. They're not perfect by a long shot, but none of you can see the struggles they had to overcome, the temptation in their own lives. But I know their private lives. And while people seem to get upset at a lot of their writings, I've seen what they would have done if they hadn't put so much energy into writing. Why do you think I made all this incredibly complex church history and doctrine anyway? The articles of faith could save you, so what's all this other stuff? It's a trick to keep people busy writing and expounding, that's all. Because I know what they would do if they had more time on their hands. You don't like McConkie or Peterson, and they don't like all the people writing in Sundial papers. I'm just personally very glad both of you spend so much time at their typewriters. Trust me. And Hubie Brown and Hugh Nibley, too. But don't ask. It's confidential. But we were talking about baseball. Sure, it brings about a lot of bad things, but we're far better off with it than without it. High school Neanderthals, without high school sports, to put all their negative physical energy into are not a pretty sight. Some sports are too violent, some are too bland, some are too ritualistic, some are too simple. But baseball, that's my one and only true sport. The only thing that bugs me are those players and spectators who want all the thrills, all the rewards, all the emotional highs of the organized sport, but then they get ticked off at the umpires and all the rules. You can't have the benefits of organized professional sports without the rules.
But sometimes the umpires are wrong.
Well, tell me something I don't know. Most of them are pretty good. I already told you about that 8.2% jerk factor.
But how do I say this? What if I just don't like baseball? What if I just spend 20 hours trying to force myself to like it and telling myself I ought to like it and feeling guilty for not liking it? But one day I wake up and I just look in the mirror and admit, you know what, baseball is not my sport. I'm not going anymore.
Then quit driving everyone else crazy and just go join a basketball team. Just leave and be happy.
My country, love it or leave it, huh?
I'm not saying I don't mind suggestions. There's nothing so constant as change. It's great to try innovations, an orange baseball, a designator hitter, cutting the length of service from a two-hour game to an hour and a half. Nightlights are the greatest innovation the game's ever had. We can finally see the dark clearly. Some changes will work and some won't, but they've all got to be approved by the commissioner or else it's chaos. That may sound like authoritarian dictatorship, but it's just a fact of life. You can't have all the benefits without all the rules and regulations. But listen to your own words. If you wake up and find baseball just isn't your thing, then get out and find a better sport and be happy. I'm not into martyrdom and torture. At times I've wanted to be, but it just isn't my thing. So go be happy. What we don't need is a 99th version of basketball rules. We need baseball to remain basically baseball.
Can we stop talking analogies? I'm really getting confused. Are you saying it's okay to leave the church? It's just a personal choice after all?
I'm saying I don't really get a thrill out of seeing anyone tortured.
But is it okay eternally?
Let me just say this. Whatever you choose to do, leaving does not abolish my eternal commandments. People seem to want this made-up-in-your-own-image, feel-good church of what's happening now. You want the church of sincerity, the church of all good dogs go to heaven. All right, well, let me tell you what my definition of a good dog is. Good dogs give away 10% of their income, no matter what. That's older than Mormonism. Good dogs live by a code of dietary laws. Always have, always will. Good dogs make one day of the week different, special, holy. Good dogs practice self-control sex-wise. Good dogs sacrifice to love and build one other person all their life long. Good dogs serve each other. Everyone is going to die, and if you choose to walk on holy or on dangerous ground, you better walk very carefully. My commandments count in the church or out.
Back to something your wife said a minute ago. She said a lot of things on genetics or hormones. The old nurture-nature debate. Which is it, environment or genes?
You really want easy answers, don't you? It's both.
Well, of course both, but how much of which? Which wins out?
It's so funny. If you claim that there are any genetic differences between men and women, you are immediately a Nazi bigot. On the other hand, if you don't claim there's a genetic difference between gays and straights, you're still a Nazi bigot. It's another no-winner.
But do we really have free agency, or is it all just biology?
Okay, I'll tell you. It's 71%, 28%, and 11.5%. There. Are you happy? When all is said and done, it's all biologically determined, but 11.5%. That's all you're free with. You only control the rudder, but the rudder can still control everything else. So you humans are still responsible, and you won't be punished for Adam's sins or anyone else's, but you will be for your own. You don't have to feel guilty about all your dirty little natural instincts, but just what you choose to do with them. 11.5%. Does that satisfy you?
Could I ask you a really tough question?
Well, we're out of time. I'm sorry.
Well, I'm going to ignore that. We read about the slaves and the Native Americans, the Holocaust. What were they? The Chmelnitsky massacres of 1648, where they took pregnant Jewish women and cut open their bellies and pulled out the fetus and put live cats inside to eat them alive?
Come on. People have free agency.
No. That's not my question. I know free agency. My question is deeper. Like, how those humans who did that, they were the good ones in the pre-existence. They lived with you for billions of years. Yes, they had free agency, but how could they come to do such things? Your own children.
That's way too complicated. Let's come back when we have a little more time.
There's an answer?
Let's come back to that later.
There isn't an answer?
Well, they scheduled me in the short time period, so I'm sorry. We're out.
We need an answer.
If there's nothing else, then I need to get going.
Wait. I mean, I must ask this. I must. Is Mormonism really your number one choice? Will you state categorically, here and now, that the Book of Mormon and the Salt Lake Prophets are 100% true?
I'd be happy to answer that, but you won't let me.
Won't let you? We're begging you. Go ahead. Shoot.
Have you asked me privately, prayerfully?
Dozens of times. But look, there's all these people here. Think of the effect. Just say yes or no right now. We'll do whatever you say. Please.
And you think I'd answer that question like this and rob you of the joys and tortures of answered prayers? You must think I'm a monster.
You're a monster if you won't say it straight out.
And rob you of the chance to go through all the torment and growth that comes from trying to figure out on your own? A religion that does not kick you in the gut and wrench your heart out and twist it in knots, keeping you up all hours of the night, banging your head against the wall, isn't worth anything. We all know all the tormenting questions. How come so many people tell me Moroni's promise works, and I can't break through the wall? And the church is way too full of human error to be divine, and it's way too divine to be fully human. And should I keep trying? And how can I get an answer? And should I try again? And can it all possibly, impossibly, miraculously be true? Possibly, maybe. Where is the gift of the Holy Ghost? And if I go through any more nights like this, I can't think about it anymore. It's driving me crazy. I can't pray. I can't not pray. Is prayer worse before you get an answer when you think no one is listening? Or is it worse after you get an answer and you know that you just might get another answer, but it might not be what you want to hear? And then, boom, you do get the answer. Glory, hallelujah. Your greatest day on earth. Or maybe you're most terrible. You tell me. And here now, you want me to rob you of that day of glory? Why don't you ask me to describe sex so you'll never have to experience that? Do you really, deep down, want me to tell you?
Yes, I do. You always dodge these questions. Straight out, once for all, yes or no, don't be chicken.
And you'll do it. If I tell you right now, it will make a difference. You promise?
Yes, I promise.
You'll cut your discretionary spending in half and move to a smaller home and give up all your PG-13 movies and your modern lit and your intellectual pride and switch political parties and stop noticing the people in the tight pants and join abortion clinic sit-ins and give four or five of the nearby homeless a permanent bedroom in your own house and read McConkie and Packer morning, noon, and night and open the borders to all the Mexicans and vote for increased taxes and the death penalty and against gay and lesbian centers or vice versa and be absolutely obedient and submissive in absolutely everything wherever they lead you, especially when one of the 8.2% is leading you, just on my say-so, right here and now, you promise. Well?
Well?
Who's chicken? You don't really want me to comment, do you? Deep, deep down, no comments from me may seem like hell, but really, isn't that really what you really, really want?
No, sure. I mean, we're weak, we're doubtful, but we need help. We really do. We want you to help us. We need you. We need to hear from you. Please. Oh, what? You're not talking now? What kind of game is this? What? Wait, I've got a trillion more questions. What about polygamy and the 1978 revelation and evolution and Joseph Fielding Smith about men never getting to the moon and Brigham Young on slavery and gays and academic freedom and church finances and the century's almost over? What about the second coming? Come on. Don't leave us like this. Come on. Thank you, Wink. Even though Chris doesn't want me to say anything about him, this is Chris Conkling, and I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Just to give you a little bit of bio. And Robin, pardon me. And his lovely wife, Robin.
The little missus.
Chris Conkling wrote the screenplay for the United Artists film Lord of the Rings and the Deseret book, A Joseph Smith Chronology. His articles on the Book of Jacob were published in The Ensign, and his articles on the LDS Church in Japan, published in BYU Studies, won a Mormon History Award. So I think he is the one that should get the applause for this wonderful script.
I just found it on my doorstep. I don't know.
And I guess we have about five more minutes. If anybody wants to ask questions about how Chris happened to be the one that got this wonderful script on his doorstep or anything like that, this revelation.
Are you going to publish it anymore?
Is this going to be published?
I didn't have any plans. I mean, they didn't ask me to when they left it on my doorstep. I don't know. We just did it for today.
Well, is there any way of getting hold of copies?
Well, if anybody wants to publish it.
You can't have my copy, but you can have someone else.
I have been working on a book that's not Mormon-oriented, but it's called My God Don't Do Windows, which some of these thoughts are taken from. I have a few copies here, but I cut out a lot more of the offensive parts because it was too long. So anyway, I do have a few copies with me.
A little abbreviated. Yes, in the back. Yes, the three Nephites dropped it by the door.
They live four doors down, so it's probably like...
What prompted you to do this?
What was your motivation and what prompted you to do this?
Sue Cannon called me about a month ago. I've done four or five papers at Sunstone in the past, and I just thought this would be an interesting way to sort of bring them all together, see if any of the ideas held up, and throw out ideas that hopefully will offend everybody and get us thinking and talking.
Yes.
What you need to do is get Pat Bagley to do
cartoons with it. But it actually helps me to. I mean, some of the ideas I find not doctrinal but are helpful. The fact that maybe sometimes we feel out of it in the church is just. Luck of the draw, we're just born into the wrong galaxy. That's sort of helpful, you know. And the idea of Heavenly Father wanting us to go through all these trials and holding back and letting all the terrible things happen to us and the Savior begging on our behalf, but most of the time we've chosen to go through it alone. I don't know if that really happens doctrinally. There are scriptures that actually support that, but it's a very helpful way for me to think about things.
Any other comments? Wink.
I was just amazed. Really, are you the whole time?
I don't think she would.
He's very feminine.
You know, that's the part I have the most nervous about, because it offends a lot of people. Obviously, I think it is an issue. We do hundreds of papers about the church not being sensitive to women. I do think the real challenge is how to get more men to submit to the church, and we don't address that, or maybe organizationally we do, but I think that's a real area that we tend to just pass over as if it's not important. And I think it's having teenage sons, I think it's very important.
Any other questions? Well, we'll close it up then. Thanks very much.